This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a breathtaking exhibit of glass art, a showcase of Louisiana music, or a staged psychological thriller, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. An exhibit of new glasswork by Seattle artist Dale Chihuly is underway at the Arthur Roger Gallery here in New Orleans. WWNO's Eileen Fleming got a preview of what's on display.
It's just a few minutes after the doors opened at the Arthur Roger Gallery on Julia Street, and the collector's preview is already crowded. It's the first time the space has been transformed to accommodate one artist. Roger said it seemed logical to feature Chihuly.
New Orleans has always had an affinity to glass. I mean, Tulane has an extraordinary glass school with Gene Koss, and so it only seemed natural, you know, that we should be showing Dale Chihuly's work.
It's so familiar, but there are new pieces here.
There are pieces that you will be familiar with, like the baskets, which were the very first pieces Dale did. We have Persian walls, which are the works that really cross Dale over from craft into fine arts.
And that artist has an international following. His work is in more than 200 museum collections worldwide. His distinctive hanging pieces that he always calls chandeliers have no internal lighting, yet twinkle with projected illumination. And he's famous for working big. Large-scale sculptures can be seen in New Orleans at City Park, the Pan Am Building, and University Medical Center. There have been Chihuly pieces in the gallery before. Roger has known the artist for decades.
Now, I've had the gallery 41 years. I've known Dale pretty much the entire time that I've had the gallery. I got to know him, and I was at the LA Art Fair, and Dale said, you know, you should be showing my work. And I said, yes, I absolutely should. And it was really a great relationship. I mean, New Orleans has always had an affinity to glass. I mean, Tulane has an extraordinary glass school and with Gene Koss, and so it only seemed natural, you know, that we should be showing Dale Chihuly's work.
There are familiar pieces, like the blown sculptures inspired by Native American baskets. One group is displayed on a heavy custom-designed table in a front window. And new pieces called Rotolo looks like swirling crystal pasta.
There's Rotolos, which are probably Dale's most ambitious works that he's ever done in his entire career, that are these probably the heaviest pieces Dale has ever done, but they have a weightlessness about them in their appearance.
Look up, and there's a 24-foot pergola ceiling supporting an intricate assembly of at least 100 glass elements depicting sea life. Supporting those heavy pieces was a major concern for contractor Dan Alley of Porter Art Services of New Orleans. The gallery closed for a month to prepare for the exhibit. It was Alley's job to make sure the walls could seamlessly handle the weight, and he had only 2 weeks. Chihuly's staff assembled the pieces on the walls and checked the lighting. Alley, a glass artist himself, was already very familiar with Chihuly's work.
I was just really thrilled to be just a small part of this project. It was just immensely fun for me, and I went to a Chihuly exhibition and saw a ceiling like this when I was in junior high in Anchorage, Alaska, where I grew up, and it was kind of my first art moment that I remember. So.
Wow. So you go back with this?
Yeah, I do, and I'm from the Northwest, so I've seen the museum up there in Seattle, and it was an honor.
And the show, does it do you proud?
Oh, yes.
For those who haven't seen Chihuly at work, Roger points to a short video showing the process that takes several people working together to accomplish the artist's vision.
Nothing in glass is singular. I mean, anyone who works in glass, if you've ever been fortunate to go in a studio, I mean, it's almost like watching a dance. I mean, everybody is working in unison with each other, and you have to. I mean, it's dangerous. You have to be very mindful. And not only is it dangerous, if you aren't mindful, you're going to destroy what you're working on.
Chihuly himself is not expected to attend the show. He's currently busy with an exhibit in London's Kew Gardens. His wife, Leslie, the president and chief executive officer of Chihuly Incorporated, will do a walkthrough on June 6th. For Inside the Arts, I'm Eileen Fleming.
The new works of Dale Chihuly at the Arthur Roger Gallery on Julia Street runs through June 22nd. The largest Showcase of Louisiana Music. French Quarter Festival, presented by Chevron, kicks off this week. This year marks the festival's 36th anniversary. Local artists representing a variety of genres are gearing up for the four-day musical blowout. French Quarter Festivals, Inc., President and CEO Emily Madero is here. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, every year this festival gets bigger and better. It has come a long way since its humble beginning in the 1980s. What's the attraction for visitors who come from around the world to attend?
Well, it's such a unique festival because it's free and open to the public, and it takes place in such an iconic neighborhood. You know, we really use the canvas of the French Quarter itself as our festival grounds. You can go explore the shops and the restaurants that make the neighborhood what it is, and at the same time enjoy traditional jazz in the street or go out to the riverfront and see some of the other music that we have playing. So there really is nothing like this. You're exploring the culture, the architecture, the food, the music, all at once.
How did this festival get its start?
Actually, Dutch Montreal in 1984, the city was going through so much construction with the World's Fair that a lot of the businesses in the French Quarter were suffering. So his vision was to throw a big party. Let's get locals back to the quarter. Let's support those businesses that, you know, really rely on tourism and hospitality, and let's have locals do that. So 36 years later, that same founding mission still rings true. You know, our focus is on showcasing the music and the culture that's so unique and that we love so much, and doing that in a way that drives economic impact. So in 4 days, we have about $198 million worth of economic impact. We actually work with UNO to understand what the impact of the festival is, and we support 2,200 jobs.
So what's new this year?
Oh, we have so many goodies that are new. Well, something that I'm really excited about is that we are showcasing 48 debuts. So that's a record number.
Oh, my.
Yeah. You know, it's a real challenge. We have such an incredible amount of musicians and talent here in New Orleans. There's such a depth of it that every year we struggle to figure out how to showcase the artists that we love, like Irma Thomas, who graces our stages every year. She is truly a living legend. And also make sure that we're able to identify new talent and make sure that we're showcasing rising stars. So Greg Schatz, who has been curating the music on our stages for many years, does a great job. And one of our goals this year was to make sure that everybody who we had booked last year that didn't get an opportunity to play on Saturday, which was our rainout, had the opportunity to come back. So we've got 48 debuts from Galactic to Sweet Olive String Band. There's so much music that you can see this year that we're really excited about. We also have a new stage on the riverfront.
Oh.
So, yes, we are debuting a stage on the Moonwalk Extension. The city redid the beautiful Moonwalk Extension right behind Washington Artillery Park earlier this year. We'll be having a stage right on the steps that go down into the Mississippi River. So you can see some of my good friends and favorite artists, Anais St. John, and we'll also have Dancing at Dusk there. Tom Saunders and the Tomcats will be playing during Dancing at Dusk, and we'll have professional dancers out there Sunday, and it's going to be a really beautiful place to take in some music in the Mississippi River. We have an expanded Chevron evening concert series that will happen on Bienville Triangle at the Chevron stage, and that stage will still feature Cajun Zydeco music all weekend long. But what we're doing is in the evening time, we wanted to make sure to bring expanded genres of our headliners to those stages. So we'll have John Cleary, George Porter Jr., Flo Tribe, and of course, Rockin' Doopsie will be closing it out as he does every year.
And you've got some new food vendors this year?
We do. Everything from food trucks to fine dining. So you can have Miss Linda's Yakamain, or you can go sample some bites from Galatoire's. The new vendors, Moro's is going to be joining us. They have some incredible dishes. And of course, every time I drive by there, there's a line down the street. So this is your opportunity to come sample their dishes. We also have a new company called Sweet Handcraft. They're coming in and they make these wonderful ice cream sandwiches made out of French macaroons. They're brightly colored, they're delicious, and I think in a hot, sunny day, you're definitely going to want to go seek them out.
Wow. Now, I hear that French Quarter Fest is going green.
We will be introducing recycling across all of our major sites. So everywhere you see a French Quarter Festival trash can, you'll see right next to it a recycling bin. Those were provided by a generous donor friend of Fest and Pepsi, and you can recycle your aluminum cans, plastic beer cups, even clean cardboard, and of course, what plastic water bottles. So we need everybody's help. We're hoping to divert over 40,000 pounds of trash from landfills to recycling. And in order to support that, we're introducing a new reusable cup, 22-ounce souvenir cup featuring Corey Henry and Chief Juan Pardo. It's a beautiful photograph of one of their performances on our stage. The proceeds of that will go to supporting our recycling effort.
So what is the best way to plan your day and move about the festival?
You can go to our website, which is fqfi.org. We also have a mobile app that was created by GE, so you can go and download that app. That has all of our festival schedules, but we also have partnered with the Times-Picayune and, of course, Offbeat and Gambit, so included in all of our local publications will be inserts with our schedule. It will have the food menus so you can see what you want to eat and plan your day out accordingly. We want to make sure that if you are in New Orleans, you know that French Quarter Fest is happening and you'll be able to easily navigate the event.
How many stages? How many acts?
So we have 23 stages across the entire French Quarter Festival, and that includes the Jones Walker Let Them Talk stage. I'm really excited about that stage this year.
What's happening there?
That is on the third floor of the Jazz Museum at the Mint. We partner with David Kunian and our friends at the Jazz Museum to curate a really wonderful interview schedule of all the musicians that are playing on our stages. So fellow WWNO show host Gwen Tompkins will be interviewing Rory Danger and the Danger Dangers, and you can see some of your favorite local artists and just hear about their life and their inspiration and their music. So that's a really fun stage to be able to duck off into. We have over 300 acts, and that is everything from the musicians who play in our opening day parade. Thursday at 10 a.m. we'll be parading down Bourbon Street and into Jackson Square for our opening ceremony. Usually about 1,700 local musicians that participate, which is really wonderful.
French Quarter Festivals, Inc., President and CEO Emily Madero. Happy Fest.
Thank you.
French Quarter Festival, presented by Chevron, runs Thursday, April 11th through Sunday, April 14th in the French Quarter. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A psychological thriller set in our city's Garden District continues its run in the Tennessee Williams Theater Company's production of Suddenly last summer. The rarely produced one-act family drama is layered with symbolism as Williams examines the essence of life in what some regard as his most poetic work. Director and Tennessee Williams scholar Augustin Carrero is here with cast members Gwendolyn Foxworth and Matthew Retz. Welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Congratulations, or in order, Augustin, as you have some exciting news about a new partnership.
We do. This is the first production that the Tennessee Williams Theater Company of New Orleans will be staging at Loyola University New Orleans, and we have just begun a residency, so we're going to be there for most of our shows from here forward.
That's great news. Mm-hmm. Now, this production, the city's Garden District, with its gorgeous mansions, proved fertile ground for Tennessee Williams in this stark drama. How did you come to choose the work?
So this concludes our fourth season, which was entitled No Quarter for New Orleans / French Quarter. This one takes place outside of the quarter in the Garden District, so we're able to include more of the city in the breadth of works that we're showing by the playwright.
Now, when Suddenly Last Summer appeared in the late 1950s, how was it received?
Surprisingly well for an off-Broadway offering by Tennessee Williams at this period in his life. It was double billed with another play called Something Unspoken under the title Garden District, and it was considered to be sort of a return to the great works by Tennessee Williams. It showed his southern heroines, his family drama, his concern with inheritance and reputation. And it was before some of his later works, which didn't get that sort of great reception.
And Gwendolyn and Matthew, you play major characters in this work. Let's set the stage.
The story begins with an introduction to Violet Venable, who is an uptown matron. And she is welcoming Dr. Kukrowitz, She has specifically invited him because her son, Sebastian, a poet, died under mysterious circumstances in a place called Cabeza de Lobo. And she knew that he went there with his cousin, Catherine Holly, and then died under mysterious circumstances. And she is very convinced that somehow her niece was involved in some way. Unfortunately, her side of the story is not pleasing to Violet, and she decides that she wants to have that stopped. And she has identified a very controversial and new procedure called a lobotomy, which is very, very important in the life of Tennessee Williams because his sister was lobotomized and he always had a troubling sense of guilt about it.
And of course, you are Violet.
I am Violet.
And Matthew, you are?
A very young doctor working on a new procedure. It's radical. Once I meet Catherine and I see how Violet and Catherine react to each other, I start to realize that Violet's motives might not be the best there are. There might be some hidden agenda.
I don't know why, but I already feel as if I can lean on your shoulder, Dr.
Kukuritz. It's a Polish word that means sugar. So let's make it simple and call me Dr. Sugar.
Well, now, Dr. Sugar, you have seen Sebastian's garden.
It's like a well-groomed jungle.
Oh, that's how he meant it to be. Nothing was by accident. Everything was planned and designed in Sebastian's life and his work.
What was your son's work, Mrs. Venable, besides this garden?
You know, every time I have had to answer that question, it shocks me a little. I mean, to realize that Sebastian Venable, the poet, is still unknown. It still shocks me, even to today. Well, he's not known outside of a small coterie of friends, including his mother.
Oh.
This drama explores guilt, repression, denial. There's a great deal of religious imagery because Sebastian becomes singularly concerned, as we hear more and more about him, of becoming some kind of a sacrifice or being atoned for what he's done. And so we learn so much about this character that doesn't exist in the action of the play. We only learn about him through the narratives of Violet and from Catherine. This is all drawn out by the doctor because neither of them is really forthcoming with the story so much. But then as the doctor draws out the story, we begin to find more and more details about Sebastian. He becomes almost an erotic and heroic character in his absence because we're able to put upon Sebastian whatever we want since he's not here to defend himself or to deny it. Violet becomes the champion of Sebastian's reputation, whereas Catherine becomes champion of what she is saying is the truth. And so what we have is truth versus reputation, reputation versus sort of a beautiful portrayal of somebody. How much does it really hurt after someone is dead to let them rest in peace? And can the truth disturb that peace? I think there are plenty of disturbing themes throughout the entire course of the 90-minute drama.
What has crystallized for me is you actually have a relationship between a mother and a son that is rather smothering. She is like a helicopter mom to the nth degree. And as a result of that, over the years, she has come to want to control his life totally, literally entrapping him in her love, not allowing him to develop on his own and have his own life. What we don't know is how, in actuality, he responds to that and is what eventually happens to him. Is it the result of the way he was raised and the unhealthy environment that he was brought up in?
And she will go to any lengths to
protect
his reputation.
That's right. Because that's all she has left of him now, is his reputation. And it has to be the reputation that she wants him to have, not what it actually may be. in the end, things sort of go awry for Violet because of that. And I think it's a cautionary tale for parents. Children do need to be nurtured and protected, but they need a certain degree of freedom to develop into themselves. And that's what Violet deprives Sebastian of.
What do you hope audiences will question about life and our human condition after seeing this production?
I think the destructive nature of denial certainly rings true in this production. Not covering up the truth and not stifling the people in your life or trying to control them in such a way that ultimately will lead to their destruction, which arguably happens because of a collection of events set forth by Violet, Catherine, and Sebastian. No one is blameless in this play. And I think, as with all Tennessee Williams, there's a note of forgiveness in it, one in which we learn that no singular character is responsible for the tragedy of incomprehension, but it's a series of characters who don't understand each other arriving at destruction. So maybe understand each other better and destruction will be staved away.
Director Augustine Carrero and actors Gwendolyn Foxworth and Matthew Retz, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Tennessee Williams Suddenly Last Summer, presented by the Tennessee Williams Theater Company of New Orleans, runs through April 13th in the Lower Depths Theater at Loyola University, corner of Calhoun Street and St. Charles Avenue. More info is online at twtheaternola.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.